Oh, gosh. Oh, well, welcome back to The Work. This is the
Moichido
edition of The Work, which is Japanese for one mo again. This is...
And what is one mo again English for?
It is redneck for once more again.
Ah, into the breach, my friends.
Indeed. This is episode one of season two of The Work. So excited to be back. We've changed things up a bit. We're going to do interviews a little bit less. We're going to be talking about the news a little bit more. And we have a new addition of to our panel, our dais, if you will. It's Lord McGiggles, also known as Danielle Carroll in real life. But you can find her at LordMcGiggles.com and Twitter at LordMcGiggles. It's a real deal, y'all. Lord McGiggles is a part of this show. So I want to say hi.
Hi.
As she giggles.
See, we all laugh, but she giggles.
She giggles.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Right. I'm Ryan Basham.
Hi, Ryan.
I am. I'm Ryan Basham. I forgot. Our engineer, producer, and haysayer, and Japanese speaker is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And here is your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Hey, you guys. Welcome back for season two of The Work. It is so good to be back in the studio. Yes. It's been too long. We've missed you so. But you've missed us more. So thank you for all the fan mail and all the comments about when's The Work coming back? When's The Work coming back? And
like for real, y'all.
Yeah, for real. It's been really nice because it's, you know, you put stuff out there and you wonder if people are listening to it, and then when you take it away for a little while, you find out people are listening to it because they keep asking, when's it coming back? Well, now we're back. So, yay, season two.
Hell yeah.
We have a shit ton of... Let's go ahead and get that potty mouth right out there since we are marked explicit at
Damn
iTunes.
It.
We've got a shit ton of news from Ryan.
Truth.
But first, walk us through. What are we doing first? Are we going to...
Let's talk about first what we have been up to since we've been off the air.
What have we been up to? Yes, It's been a few months. We did a total of 23 episodes for season one. Five of those episodes are the lost episodes.
If you can find them for us, let us know.
That'd be awesome.
We have no idea.
Yeah, we don't know where they are, but they're great.
They are.
Someday. They will appear randomly on iTunes, and people will be like, what? This is from 30 years ago. There won't be iTunes in 30 years. I don't know. Tell that story again, Grandpa. But yes, we have five episodes from season one that will someday surface. But in the time that we've been gone, gosh, I took Self-Management for Actors on tour, went to two countries, worked with 1,000 actors.
Literally, not like kidding, but a lot of freaking actors.
Yeah, no, for real. There were standing room only, over 300 RSVPs at the SAG Foundation New York. SAG Foundation also hosted me in Chicago, and then we were at Second City in Toronto. And it was phenomenal. It was a lot of fun to get to take Self-Management for Actors seminars on the road. We also launched two additional classes in Los Angeles. Hi, email. Two additional classes in Los Angeles. So now that brings our total of weekly classes for Self-Management for Actors in LA to three.
Count them, three classes.
That's crazy. It's like I'm Ivana Chubbuck, but about the business. And... No comment.
Go on.
No. So, and speaking of, the little book went into its second printing of its third edition and got a little shout out from an up and coming future star. Oh no, wait, current star, Tom Cruise. He mentioned his team Tom Cruise mentioned Self-Management for Actors on their website as a recommendation.
That's so freaking cool.
So for actors.
No, let's spell that out a little bit more.
Okay.
On the blog, there are like 8 or 10 books listed. Uta Hagen, Sanford Meisner, Stanislavski, Michael Shurtleff, Bonnie Gillespie.
Dude. What?
Yeah, hello.
That's crazy town.
That is awesome.
What? Yes. So I'm, of course, thrilled, pleased, honored, humbled. That's pretty ridiculous.
We may have to go back to previous episodes and redact any swipes at Scientology.
Oh, no. No, no. I am done with my days of taking swipes at Scientology. Are you kidding me? I've been endorsed by the Team Tom Cruise. I love those people. No, I'm an equal opportunity religious offender. So, that's never going to stop. yay, heathens. And we launched a little website called Get A-Listed, which is the Self-Management for Actors seminar online. And we have actors all over the world working with us on a 12-week program that we're in week 5 right now, and have our weekly phone call today, and it's video content and message boards and talkbacks and cool stuff like that. And
that just, website is not just Self-Management for Actors online version of the course. We're also doing exciting things, like we're getting ready to roll out the 6 weeks to LA prep course. So if you're considering a move to Los Angeles and you want to get the inside scoop on things like how to find out where to live, what's really up with the agent and manager search, how do you really start getting connections, if you want to know what you need to know in order to move here and hit the ground running, that thing's coming in January, and we're going to do it, you know, in 6 weeks, and it's going to be awesome.
And in January, I'm headed back on the road, going to Orlando.
Orlando, Florida.
Yes, to work with the actors of the Southeast on Self-Management practice.
Good time to go to Orlando.
I was not looking to go to Chicago in January.
Nope.
I will be going back to Chicago, but it will be summertime. Spring, late spring.
Yeah.
Yes.
Before it gets too hot and humid.
Yay. Yeah. So it's been a busy time. Keith's been hired to produce a couple movies.
Write and produce.
Write and produce.
Yep.
Very, very nice.
Heck yeah.
Good stuff.
One of them's currently in post.
Yep.
Working on that. The other one is in pre-production right now, ideally shooting in middle of January.
And Ryan has launched a coaching
My
business.
My coaching business. I'm right in the middle of that launch right now. I do have a website, coaching.ryanbasham.com. I got a couple of projects I'm producing too, but those are kind of those are in development right now. So it's a lot of really exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not like we've been sitting around picking our noses.
I mean, I have been doing
that, you know, and each other's.
Yes.
But that's So while the work has been away, we have been
Lord McEagles was not here for season one. She became Bonnie's intern shortly thereafter. And Lord McGiggles is Bonnie's name, superhero name for her intern.
Well, I name all my interns and computers and my car. So
Who doesn't,
right? So yes, all my interns have superhero names, and it was very clear day one of Danielle's time with us that she is Lord McGiggles.
Not lady, Lord.
No, God, no.
Lord.
That's right.
No.
That's right.
Ladies don't have as much power. You know, I think this is just like the Navy. I was listening on NPR today on the way here. The Navy has a system for naming their different classes of ships. I think it's the same thing. You name your phones one kind of name.
Yeah.
And your interns one kind of name.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just like the Navy.
It's exactly.
Nice.
You're like a ship in the Navy. Oh, aw. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Dad.
So welcome, Danielle, Lord McGiggles. And yes, I was going to say, what have you been up to since we were last in the studio?
I'm here. That's new.
It is new. And we realized as we were talking about the news that we're going to cover today that we actually have a secret weapon as far as soaps are concerned in Lord McGiggles.
Maybe. I might have grown up watching soaps.
Maybe.
And not just watching, like, Soap Opera Digest.
I read Soap Opera Digest for many years. No, not yesterday. I was telling you before. It was before yesterday.
2 days ago.
Years ago.
She's like, I don't buy it anymore. It's online.
Thank you, Internet.
Yes. I think we'd also like to hear what everybody else has been up to. Feel free to tweet us at @the_work. I think we also have comments on podcastandthework.com on the blog page for this post. So we'd love to hear from everybody.
Yeah, if you're listening to us at iTunes, we do have a website. It's podcastingthework.com, and you can interact with us there. Because I guess at iTunes you can rate, subscribe, review, things like that.
Which we love.
Which we love, thank you.
Five stars is preferred.
Really. If you're only going to give us one star, go away. No, I'm just kidding. You take that somewhere else. Let me rate your podcast. Wait, no. So.
Damn.
But what if you would like to interact with us? Absolutely. Podcastingthework.com, and we do love the Twitter.
Yes, we do.
@the_work. It's true.
Yes, yes. Yay. So shall we move on to some news?
Let's do it.
We're not... Bonnie put a ban on all things Charlie Sheen on this podcast. So we're not going to talk about Charlie
Sheen. It's not true. We're not talking about Charlie Sheen until he's dead.
Okay, yes, fair enough. When Charlie Sheen dies, we will pay homage. Maybe.
That is when I will say his name, yes.
Okay. Right, see that?
Until then.
He who shall not be named.
Correct.
And we're not gonna talk about his ongoing custody battles. We're not going to talk about his roast on Comedy Central. We're not going to talk about his new show on cable. We're going to talk about the ratings of 2.5 Men, which have jumped considerably since he was replaced. They're up 28% in total viewers since this time last year, but they're up 39.1% in the 18 to 49 demo. So it sounds like Charlie Sheen fucking it up for himself really did everybody a favor.
Yeah.
You know, and a few months ago they were talking about maybe not continuing with the show with that.
Well, it certainly saves them money not to have him on the payroll because Ashton Kutcher's not getting nearly the paycheck that...
But do you think that he might end up there now?
You bet. You bet. If he saves the show, you bet.
You know, this is the first time I've ever thought, oh... He's an actor who people go to watch. I don't mean to be mean, but it, you know, who goes to, oh, Ashton Kutcher movie, I'm going to go see that. You know, who remembers That 70s Show because Ashton Kutcher was on it?
I do. I thought he was brilliant on that show.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't ring my bells, I guess.
Dude, sweet. that's what I get.
I go for Wilder Valderrama before, but that's just my thing. Maybe it's because he's Hispanic. I don't know. speaking of... no, I'm not even going to go with that lead-in. That was too much. There's been some real serious drama in the entertainment sphere concerning pedophilia in people who have a real opportunity to take advantage of children.
It's not just for Penn State anymore.
It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not just sports anymore, friends. Talent manager Martin Weiss was arrested. Now, he's had a reputation for years and years being a manager of child stars, which is shocking when you consider he's being held on eight separate counts, after an 18-year-old former client told police he had been abused by him 30 to 40 times from 2005 to 2008. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Well, you know, it's every time you see someone who's got a real interest in kids now, I think it's hard to not wonder if there's something there. But it's not just him. Casting director Jason James, who is really not just Jason James, but his real last name is Murphy. He was a registered sex offender. He was featured on America's Most Wanted, spent 5 years in prison after he dressed as a woman, abducted an 8-year-old child from school, and took this child to a New York City hotel.
And was found with $8,000 in cash.
Which, I mean, what were they going to do with that? $8,000, is that enough to buy your way over a border with a child?
You bet. Not that
scary
I know.
Scary stuff. Oh. In the news, Bonnie Gillespie. But, you know, I mean, this guy, this casting director, he cast School of Rock, Bad News Bears, Super 8. This is scary stuff.
Yeah, Cheaper by the Dozen 2, I think, was one of his as well, or something like that. Or yeah, it's just... It's disconcerting that you have to go through a bigger background check to, like, volunteer at a school.
You have to get fingerprinted.
Right, but you can be in a job where you get direct contact with kid actors and their crazy parents who will do anything to get their kid ahead. And so they're just very accommodating and, like, sure, yes, you need to spend time coaching my kid to get him ready for this role. Yes, spend this private time together. I mean, like, the potential for abuse is huge.
Well, you know, and parents will say things like, he'll work for free, she'll work for free if that'll get him the job.
Yeah.
Well, which is bad enough.
Every breakdown I put out, I get people saying, you know, oh, well, we can work for free, we'll work as local hired, you know, and it's like, stop trying to show us the ways that you are desperate for this work, and it's so ripe for abuse.
It's one thing for an adult to say, I'm willing to work for copy credit meals, but for a child, but then when the parent says to the kid, do whatever they say.
Yeah.
Whatever they say.
It's terrifying.
And also, let's add into the mix something that's really terrifying from my end. Everybody sitting at this table is and or was an actor type. And we all know that one of the keys to really good, solid acting is that vulnerability that you bring, that openness of spirit that you bring. And so you have to realize that any kid that is good enough to be in a callback for Super 8 or any of these movies already has an immense openness and vulnerability. And when you add that to the mix of the fact that, you know, Hollywood and acting is a necessarily intimate business and we're all thinking of ourselves as products, not necessarily people, but instead persona, You have to remember that kids that are brought up in that world, they don't really have a childhood. What they have is a place where vulnerability and thinking about yourself as a product and an object is the norm. And then what happens is the kids who are good at those two things get seen over and over and over again. And it is a recipe for, you know, the ultimate souffle of pedophilia.
But the problem is that people won't talk about it until enough people have had it happen and then are adults and have become healthy enough that they can talk about it. It's like the Corey Feldman thing. Like, he's long said, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much of this going on and has been for decades in Hollywood and, I mean, and the world. Like, it is obviously a huge issue, but it takes somebody who makes it, and Corey Feldman certainly hasn't made it unscathed. He's completely damaged from the childhood encounters that he had, but he has gotten to a point where he's healthy enough where he can talk about it. And what I hate is that this is going to happen to people who maybe never get healthy enough to talk about it, which is what keeps it happening.
Right. Well, but see, you also have to look at it this way. I mean, everybody on the planet knows the myth of the casting couch.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And it doesn't make any sense to me that everybody would know and accept that young starlets need to do what they need to do to get seen and all of that stuff and all of those things. To think that it wouldn't propagate to kids who really are just actors. I mean, to me, it's an obvious no-brainer that if the casting couch exists to the point where it is ubiquitous and everybody just accepts that it's around, it doesn't make any sense not to think that it wouldn't go there.
But, you know, I think people like to turn a blind eye. And I think nobody wants to be the one to blow the whistle. Nobody wants to be the one who says before the bad news comes out, hey, we've got a problem here, because that could hurt them. You know, people, there's a disadvantage to be the one who complains about something before everybody agrees it's a problem, even when it's something serious like this.
Well, what are they saying that the Jason James thing came out because J.J. Abrams' publicist or manager, somebody was contacted and basically said, you, J.J. Abrams, have had someone on your watch that we're about to blow the whistle on, and you probably want to have a statement about this. And then he came forward and said, hey, Bad Robot did not employ this guy. We employed April Webster and her team, and we leave it on them to do the check of the people that are working for them.
Wow. Well, and I wonder if she'll still be, do you think she'll still be casting for him?
Oh, sure.
I mean,
absolutely.
But not that he would stop hiring her, but I wonder if he handled her in such a way that she didn't feel hurt by the whole thing. You know,
she cannot have felt hurt.
No, well, I mean, it is her fault. I mean, I feel, you know, I mean, we in Hollywood, we all work under this, you know, independent contractor sphere. You know, few people are actually truly employed by someone else here.
Correct. So he's got a contract that's probably, you know, if he's working as a loon out of his corporation for her corporation, you know, we talk about those types of protections all the time.
And it should be. You know, it's like one of the great things about California is that you can, when something needs to be fixed, it's not that hard to make a law about it. You know, the casting director workshop thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you ask people in the 90s if they ever thought there'd be laws about it in the state of California, I think people are like, no, of course not. That's not important enough for the government to deal with.
Right, right.
But, you know, I think maybe because of what's happened at Penn State and other football teams and because college football teams and because of what's happening now here in entertainment, I wonder if this will lead to new legislation, if not at the federal level, at the state level.
Yeah.
I hope so. Because I think that it's not, you know, we like to think that people can take care of themselves, but children are children. And I think we forget that children are just children, even when they seem really mature for their age.
Right.
Even when they seem like they've got these amazing skills and they're just an adult hiding inside a minor's body for a minute. And that's not okay. And I think some parents really bring their kids to Hollywood wanting to protect them, their children. But some parents are willing to fudge a little bit. And I think that what needs to happen now is we need to have a system where no one who is a danger to children gets to be dealing in a private, closed room with children.
It's insane. Yeah.
It's unacceptable.
Right. I agree. I think that I don't know that the CSA has come out with any statement about this. If they have, I haven't seen it.
Nope.
And he's a CSA member, and I think that's one of the issues of an organization that's going to be considered not a governing body, but certainly the standard of excellence in the profession should step up and say, wow, we need to do better.
You know, strategically speaking, I think, you know, the CSA doesn't cover everybody who's in casting. They don't.
Nope.
And it, you know, and there's a lot of casting that goes on outside the CSA, and
you
it's
bet.
Not like being in a performers union. It's not like being a writer. It's not that hard to work without being a union member if you're a casting director. And if they want to be more important than they are, they need to be the people who become the standard bearer on this.
Well, especially since the CSA are Teamsters. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that this guy's legs aren't broken and he's not at the bottom of some ocean somewhere like the Pacific.
There's the Keith I know and love.
There it is. There
it is. It only took a few minutes.
But you guys need to understand that this topic is kind of harsh in my mellow, so I would like to move
yes.
on.
Yes, next right. topic.
We can, you know, let's talk about something lighter and a little more exciting. I know I love Harry Potter. I don't know about you guys.
Never saw it.
You really missed out. Magic
with a K? No. Thank you.
I don't think that they spell it that way in Harry Potter, do they? I don't know.
Are there wizards?
Yes.
No interest.
this is a whole other yes. podcast. So the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which is an installation at Universal Orlando's theme park, has been a cash cow for them. For the first 11 months of the year, they brought in, their revenues jumped 33%. They brought in $1.49 billion. So they were struggling before this. So now they've decided, they've just announced they're going to build something similar at Universal Hollywood. And it'll be done, they say, within 3 years. I'm pretty friggin' excited about this, y'all. I was seriously considering getting on a plane and going to Orlando.
Do you want to come on the Self-Management for Actors tour in January?
Oh yes! We're going to Universal! Oh, I'm so in! Oh, I'm so in! Have you ever been to Universal Studios in Orlando?
Possibly. I don't know. I grew up in Atlanta. I'm sure I've been to all
great
those
theme parks
places
in Orlando.
I don't know.
That are fun to go to.
I don't know. We did Six Flags.
Girl, you got to go to Islands of Adventure. That's a whole nother
really?
Thing.
I'm 41. What do I got to do?
Do you like roller coasters?
Sure.
Space Mountain. Yes.
Then you will love Islands of Adventure.
All right, then.
All right, let's go. I'm excited. Although they don't have Dueling Dragons anymore because they did away with that to build.
Again, dragons. Wizards, no interest.
I did Islands of Adventure.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, they sell those. You know, like when you go to a Ren Fair and they sell a big turkey leg?
Sure.
They got that.
Yes.
When she said sure, she means I have no idea what you're talking about.
I've been to a Renaissance festival. Fair. Fair with an E. I've been.
Wait, Magic with a K is not okay, but Fair with an E is?
I was dating a guy. Don't judge me. Don't
judge me.
Sometimes you do crazy things for love. Like dress up in
I happen to know that your husband loves Harry Potter and Battlestar Galactica.
And girls in dresses and things and yeah. Oh, but she got married, so she doesn't have to do that anymore.
Nope. There's a lot of things I don't have to do anymore.
I think it's probably a lot of, you know, if you want to get lucky tonight. that's a whole nother podcast,
again,
too.
Yes.
So, you know, back when we were taping episodes of this very podcast last season, we talked a lot about the possibility of the soaps getting canceled, then they got canceled, and then they went to the web, or they were going to, but now it turns out that they will not. Prospect Park can't pay for it. Their financing fell through, and I think that the challenges of mounting a broadcast-level TV show for the web became untenable for them. So All My Children and One Life to Live really are dead, which is kind of... it's kind of sad.
Yeah. Very sad.
Yeah, I was excited about them going to the web because I thought this was going to be the beginning of a really interesting movement.
Yes.
You know, because we know that's coming. And I really liked the idea that it was going to be soaps that led this.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it's still going to happen. It's just not going to happen with these soaps in particular. Because there was a news item that I saw last week that for the first time in history, Nielsen reports... a decrease in sales of physical television sets.
Yes, ownership of televisions is down for the first time in history.
In history.
It's the beginning of the end, y'all.
It's it. Yeah, you know, and when I saw that news item, I was like, wow. That's because more people are watching things on their gadgets, their iPhones, their iPads, their computers.
And the ripple effect is going to be massive for that. You know, as television purchases die out, you know, stores like Best Buy are going to have to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you go into a Best Buy today, a third of their store is television sets.
Not for long.
And then another third is DVDs and CDs. Not for long. And cameras, which are now on your phone. And they have a little kiosk for the phones.
That'll change.
It's going to change a lot
It'll either change or it'll be like Blockbuster, which is, I'm sorry, what?
Or Circuit City.
What's that?
So let me chime in and say why I think that I'm glad they at least went to the effort to explore the transition from television to the interwebs. You know, a lot is... talked about trying to learn how to monetize the web and trying to do this. And one of the things that really bothers me is that people aren't just jumping in ready to fail. Because, you know, honestly, you learn a great deal about the way things work by learning how they don't work. And the fact that they tried to go into this and say, you know, we're just going to go into it. And it looks like it's crashed and burned, But I'm willing to bet that there are some very, very good lessons that will be taken from where the failures happened, at what point things broke down. Because even though they ended up in not the right place, I'm willing to bet that they took some steps that are the right direction. And I think that we'll be seeing that as soon as, you know, again, somebody learns to monetize the web, but they will be using this failure as key data points.
I think you're totally right, but at the same time, I also think there's going to be a little bit of a downswing in the effort to go to the web, because I think for a little while, people are going to point to this and go, see, you can't do TV quality stuff on the web. For a little while, it's going to be like that.
But meanwhile, there will be, you know, Dr. Horrible getting Emmys.
Yes.
So you can't have it both ways.
You can't. And I think this is one of those, it's like the Wild West, you know. What's that phrase, such and such rewards the brave or something like that? You know, there's some kind of quote.
Way
about
to quote.
It. Yeah, I know. That was you know, I'd
something,
myself
something,
on
something some dark side. Something.
You know, I gotta work on that. You think I was into quotes or something. I don't know what happened. But I do think that this is one of those situations where the people who are willing to take a risk, and it's probably going to be people who don't necessarily have a lot to lose, like $1 million paychecks for producing, that are going to get this right, and then it'll be a whole new groundswell of new people. It's exciting. We'll see what happens.
It is.
So, on that point, ABC's last soap, General Hospital, is seeing some changes. They're trying to give it a new life, I think, because their ratings have decreased as well. The executive producer and head writer from One Life to Live are going over to General Hospital. And they're ousting their showrunner of a decade, who is... Go ahead.
Jill Farron Phelps.
There
is
it is.
Who you're saying?
Yes,
oh,
there
okay.
it is.
Yes, I know her name.
Yeah,
because she knows the showrunner's name.
I love that. Before you came to Hollywood and knew what a showrunner was,
right? knew-
so,
good point.
So you know, poor Jill. But I mean, after a decade, I mean, at some point you got to go. Time to move on, right? I guess. But I hate that for her. But I think that it's good that they're trying to, at least for now, save their one last soap.
How long is it going to be?
No, it's the medium, a medium of the past, I think.
The gauntlet.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I think moving on, one of the things that I find really interesting about the things that people say about Fox News is that sometimes it really just is true.
Wait, what?
what?
That's crazy.
You know, sometimes it's not just an opinion. it's like, this is how can you get around this being some kind of crazy wackadoo? A Fox anchor and a guest on, Fox Business Channel, but same sphere, and a guest were agreeing the other day on television that the new Muppets movie, is brainwashing kids against the rich, defending the rich, saying that it's creating a new generation of people who are interested in class warfare.
Are you serious?
For real, real.
Well, I have to say that the new Muppet movie used a huge... huge political baseball bat to just beat a blatantly left-wing agenda political message over the head of its audience. I mean, it was worse than WALL-E.
Oh, yeah.
In the heavy-handedness of the delivery of everything. And while I don't often agree with the stuff that... Okay, I don't ever really agree with the point they're trying to make... or the way they say it, I think that people have to make good movies and let the message come out. Don't make a message and wrap it in fluffy puppets.
Well, I don't know if that's fair. I think you make the movie you want to make, and you let the buyers decide if it was worth making or not. And the Muppets is still doing, the only thing it's beating it that's really taken it to task is Breaking Dawn.
Yeah.
You know?
I've been seeing a lot. I mean, that's one thing. As soon as the Muppet movie came out, last week? Like, Twitter and Facebook just blew
weeks,
up
think, yeah.
with people like, oh my God, this is amazing, and I'm going to go see it again. And like, people just go,
you don't hear people just
it.
Talking about how it's, mm-hmm. you know, too liberal or too class mm-hmm. warfare-y. But I think you got to remember that... you know, the audience for the Muppets is the 99%.
You bet.
You know, mm-hmm. and a great number of Americans do believe that there are rich fat cats who are taken away from everybody else. So making a movie that kind of that reflects that is not a bad idea if you're trying to sell something.
Okay, well, I'm just gonna finish off this topic with this. It Ain't Easy Being Green is not an environmental song.
No, it's not. It's not. But you know what? John Denver's song that goes, Country Roads, Take Me Home. Country Roads. You know, and then he goes, West Virginia.
I'll sing along. Mountain Mama.
He means Western Virginia. He means Southwest Virginia. But the state of West Virginia has been using that song for years. I mean, you know, it's people take something and they use it the way they want to use it. If they can spin it the way they want it. So that's life. That's what happens when you write a song.
I'm sorry. I'm just still really traumatized by the fact that there are classic rock songs being used in Walmart ads now. Was it Back in Black?
Oh, was the AC/DC?
Like, what?
Yeah.
AC/DC?
That's so weird.
On Walmart? No.
You know, corporate practices aside, they do really make an effort with their commercials. I'll give them that. They make an effort.
Mm.
They make an effort.
That should be their slogan.
We make an effort.
Moving on. So one of the things that I've heard Bonnie talk a lot IMDb age controversy.
And, that's some bullshit.
And I know you wrote a really salacious column. Isn't that good, salacious?
Salacious.
I like the way that rolls off the tongue. Yeah. Salacious column several weeks ago about this topic.
I did. I took the side that's very unpopular. It's the side of logic.
Oh, no. Logic?
No, because people want to get really, really upset about this whole IMDb listing birth dates thing and say that it's the reason that they're not getting cast because, you know, once their age is known, you know, they can't be considered for certain roles. And
there's always a reason.
There's always a reason. So, great. Okay, fine. Shut down ages on IMDb. Shut down birth dates. Fine. There will be a new reason. It will be, you know, but whatever. Age is a convenient reason because you can't negotiate it away. But all it is the explanation for the no. But the answer is no. If they wanted to cast you, it wouldn't matter what age you were. They're going to find a way to do it.
And I think if someone really wants to know how old you are, they can find
out. You bet.
There's no, like, secret veil it used to be behind. But IMDb is finally responding to this lawsuit, and they made a kind of a three-point argument, according to the Hollywood Reporter, saying, one, the woman is overstating IMDb, which I think is pretty fair. You know, IMDb is not that powerful. Two, there hasn't been any retaliation so far, and the public will make sure that there won't ever be. And I think that's a pretty simple statement to make about a kind of complex issue. But the third point they made is that the woman is just too thin-skinned, which is kind of, I mean, it kind of goes to your point. It isn't really about age, but this woman is kind of taking an affront to this, and a lot of actors do that, and I think it is a little thin-skinned. I think instead of looking at what's holding you back, you've got to look at what's going to take you forward.
And that really is my biggest point on all of that, and that's really what was at the core of the column that I wrote, which I'll link to in the show notes over at podcastingthework.com, is that it's your choice to focus on the things that are keeping you from your goals or the things that are driving you to your next tier jump. And you get to choose what you focus on. And the more attention you place on something that you consider to be limiting, the more you're limited. Mm-hmm. But that's a choice. And don't blame IMDb for it, because the people who want to blame anything outside themselves for why they're not getting ahead will find something else. Mm-hmm. So as soon as, IMDb takes it away, there will be something else that they're now blaming, because
absolutely,
the last thing they want to do is actually look at themselves and go, oh, maybe I need to get more talented.
It kills me. You know, I got an email from somebody who was interested in coaching the other day, talking about how things used to be in the minor market they used to be in, and how things are that they don't like. And it's when you focus on the negative, you're going to stay in that world. You're not going to make progress.
Yeah.
You're not going to manifest anything positive. So good on you when you work that out. This is a big topic. And I think we're probably going to spend a little bit of time talking about this, but ICM is kind of having a meltdown right now. It's been going on for a little while. It's been going on for most of the year, from what I understand, but it just came out a few weeks ago. And
ICM, one of the big 10 agents, one of the big five.
And has been declining in prowess in recent years.
Right.
I think the long and short of it is, 6 or 7 years ago now, what became ICM, there was a merger involved, and the long and short of it is the CEO, who was a little bit older, a little bit more old school, and not that warm and gregarious of a person, and his number two, his heir apparent, who is, one of those guys who makes a friend with everybody at the bar, is really, really aggressive and you know, well liked in the I'd have a beer with him kind of sense, are at war. And, you know, said number two, what's his name? Jeff Gregg. Silberman, Chris Silberman. Yeah, that's what it is. That's his name.
Jeff Gregg.
Chris. There's definitely a Jeff involved.
He was running down his dates from last night.
I was like, where? 8 p.m. 8:45 p.m. You know, you're get in, easy. Get out. I try to do in one neighborhood. Chris Silberman, he's it looks like, I mean, I don't know any of these people, so I can't speak to their character, but it looks like he's really trying to edge out his boss, edge out the guy running the show, and is willing to do whatever he has to do to make it happen. And in the meantime, I think it looks really nasty in there, and they're forcing people who work at ICM are being forced to choose sides. You know, there people who are repped by ICM are wondering every day if what's going to happen to their representation.
So people are jumping ship because it's
a big
scary.
Old mess.
Yeah,
it's a big old mess. You know, and I think if I were in the film business, I'd be like, I don't want to be with ICM anyway because their film business is declining. If I was in the TV business, I'd be going, ICM's doing really well in TV, but what the hell, dude? What's going to be my future? I think this is ultimately going to be good for people who are represented.
In general, like anywhere, because to me this is sort of like the monopoly of the Ma Bell, you know, and break up when there are the bigs, mm-hmm. and start having some smaller players with more traction. It's not a bad thing.
Mm-mm. No, it's not a bad thing. In the meantime, though, I wonder if I imagine Chris Silberman will go on to have an amazing career doing whatever he does, no matter what happens here.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's kind of put himself in league with Michael Ovitz, who is kind of notorious for being a horrible, you know, horrible person to deal with. He does really shady stuff. Not a lot of people like him in Hollywood, but he's also an incredibly wealthy man.
It's very powerful.
You know, it kind of makes sense that he and Chris Silverman would be in business together, but I wonder what's going to happen to all these people, and I think it'll be interesting to watch. You know, we don't do this a lot, but I want to say, you know, Nikki Fink's coverage at Deadline about this is great. She's done lots of articles about this, and I think it's very, very wise of people in this business to pay attention to what's happening here.
Yep.
So, referral to her. I hope we get a check in the mail for that.
yeah, that's what she's looking for.
So I think that's it for the news. There's been a lot of stuff to catch up on.
A lot, yes. True. Oh, my goodness gracious. What's exciting in your world, Lord McGiggles?
I'm here today. That's exciting.
It is exciting. So will you tell people where your name came from and what the full name is?
Well, I think it was because I was giggling a lot. So it was Giggles, and then it was McGiggles, and then
the Giggles became Regal.
Right. We made her royal.
Yes. And how does that sound?
But what? Cheerio, I don't know.
Yes.
So we thought not lady, lord was appropriate in this instance. And the full name is Lord McGiggles Malaprop.
Well, because everyone who is royalty has like 50 names.
God, that's right. True.
So does Dumbledore, by the way.
Is that a Harry Potter thing?
Mm-hmm.
Hey!
Yeah, he's got like 15 names.
I've got progress.
Well, you had some real serious context clues.
the fact that you stared me down the second you said it.
Yeah.
Like, that must mean something. Wait, that's a callback. It's not about pedophilia. Well, maybe. I don't know. But it's about...
Well, you know, some might say.
Okay, I don't know.
Only fools rush in. I'm done. it was close enough. Friggin' fantastic. I think, are we coming to the close of our first episode of season two?
I think we may be.
Oh my gosh, this is so cool.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
It is, it's good to be back. Thank you for showing up and listening to what we have to say on the podcast and on the Pretend Radio. We so enjoy doing this for you, and we hope you continue to enjoy hearing it. I'm Ryan Basham. To my left is our new addition, Lord McGiggles, Danielle Carroll. Our engineer producer, Hey Sayer, and Japanese speaker is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And of course, your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Thank you guys for joining us for season two, episode one of The Work on December 7th of 2011. It's been an amazing year. We will be in the studio a few more times before we close out this year. Woo! And continuing into 2012 with season two. Of course, we're at iTunes. We're at podcastingthework.com, on Twitter at the_work. We'd love to hear from you. And till next time, keep creating.